Hello and welcome everybody to another episode of the Mental Toughness and Body Show. Today on this show, we're going to talk about sex and the role that it plays in our mental and physical health. Our guest today is going to inspire you, I think, to take a deep assessment of your own sexual health. She's a skilled nurse practitioner and also a sexologist, focusing on the interconnectedness of mental resilience and sexual well-being. Now, obviously, on this podcast, we've interviewed people from all walks of life, from your A-list celebrities to Olympic gold medalists and billion-dollar empire builders. But today we have Melissa Hadley Barrett. Melissa, how are you?
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. So let's get into it. Maybe to start with, tell us a little bit about your background, Dan, because it's a very specific area of health here that we're talking about, your sexual health. So tell us a little bit about your background and why this area of sexual health.
Basically, I was a nurse originally, a very long time ago, and I worked in emergency departments. And then I became a midwife when I was young. And then I went off and was a remote area nurse. So I worked in Aboriginal communities and Abrolhos Islands, Cocos Island, Christmas Island, like remote areas. And in those times, there wasn't any other health people there except me. And so I saw like everything from, you know, pregnant women all the way through the spectrum to older age. And there was also, you know, obviously when you're doing that, working as a generalist, there's a lot of sexual health issues along all of those different age groups. And then in 2003, I became a nurse practitioner, which means you can diagnose illness and write prescriptions and order tests and basically do what a GP does. And then in 2011, I went into private practice in that. And in that time, I was the only female working in a practice that had all male doctors. And so I found I got all of the sexual health issues came in the door for me. And one day in particular, this lady came in, we'll call her Grace, and she was in her 60s. And I remembered she came in for a pap smear, or what's now called a cervical screen. And I remember that I had remembered her because she was in charge of the emergency department when I was like a 22-year-old and I'd worked there. And she was in 40s. And on night shift, she used to come in and tell me about her amazing sex life. And as a 22-year-old, you think anyone in their 40s is way too old to have sex. And yeah. I used to go home and say to my new husband, oh my God, I'm working with this old bird. She's gross. She talks about as a sex life at night time. Anyway, years later, when I was in my 40s and she was in her 60s, she came in for a pap smear. And when I tried to do it, she had really bad vaginal pain and dryness. And I asked her about it and said, I remember you being really sexually active. Like, I realized by then that 6-year-old still did it. There's something we can do to help. Why have you let it get like this? And she burst into tears and said that her husband had had his prostate out. And he'd been depressed for 2 years. He wasn't able to get an erection. They had no intimacy anymore. He didn't touch her at all, hold her hand, cuddle her. Their whole relationship had completely broken down. And she was really sad about it. And no one had ever talked to them about the ramifications of prostate cancer treatment and how to deal with that. And so when we finally finished what we were doing, I chatted to her and then I asked her to get her husband to come in, and he did. And really, I was doing a lot of mental health at the time, and I was really hoping to chat to him about how he could deal with it. And that I got them both to chat. And, you know, she sort of said to him, I don't care if we never have penetrative sex again. I just want to be close and be intimate to you. And he said he couldn't manage that because he felt like it was false advertising. You know, he couldn't start something off and not finish it. Anyway, I sent them away with homework, which was, you know, just get reacquainted, cuddle, kiss, talk about this, you know, just do nice things again together. And, you know, I'll go away and try and find out how I can help. And I went off to a specialist in Perth, which I was living in a country town, and found out how I could help them. And then when I went back, they were so grateful. And they really, he stopped, he ended up being able to get off his antidepressants. He had a totally different outlook of life, and they really reconnected. Yeah. And after that, I sort of thought, there's not really many people doing this. So I went home and said to my husband, I want to go back to uni and I want to learn about sexuality and the psychological side of it. And so I went back to uni and did postgraduate studies in sexology. And then for a few years after that, I did a mixture of general practice and this. And now all I do is sexual dysfunction. So I do see women as well, but mainly men, because there's not many people looking after men's sexual health. There's a lot of people looking after women.
Yeah, nice. I mean, you've probably answered by way of that case study there, a part of my next question. But the interconnectedness between sexual health and mental health. Talk a little bit about that. I think as much as we have grown as a society, it's still talking about your sexual health, whether it's boasting or whether it is talking about problems, particularly with men, it's something that you just don't talk about because of what that means to you. I'm an incomplete man, or, you know, whatever it is. So tell us what you see from a clinical perspective as to why it's so important to do what it is that you do.
First of all, I think that the World Health Organization puts sexual health and having a, you know, healthy sexual life on the same importance as food, water, and shelter. So I think if it's okay, good enough for the World Health Organization, it's good enough for the rest of us to pay attention. I also think that physically, when we're like human beings and chimpanzees are supposed to be physically connected and intimate with other people. And so that's a big part. You know, if you get a baby and that's, you know, got no parents and it never gets touched and it's put in a cot and not looked after, they don't grow and their brains don't form like they do with physical touch. So it's, I think we can't underestimate how important that is, that having intimacy with other people is.
Mm.
And when we have an orgasm, for instance, our body releases oxytocin, serotonin, dopamine, all of those happy hormones that make us feel good, that, you know, as medical professionals, we prescribe to people when they're depressed or anxious. And so this is like a natural way of dealing with some of these issues. So I think from that perspective, it's really important. But I also think it's the reverse. If something isn't working properly in our sex life or parts of our body aren't physically functioning, then often because it's related to sex, we're too embarrassed to talk about it to our friends, particularly men. And also it sort of takes away from your masculinity or your femininity. And so I think one of the biggest things I see with men is often they're not even that worried about whether or not they're having regular sex. It's just whether they can if they want to. And, you know, I always say that if you had an arm and it got paralyzed, you wouldn't just leave it. You'd go to the physio and work out that problem. You don't want a part of your body that just is useless to you. Yes. And I think, you know, your sexual function is no different. Like, it's there for a reason. It's there to enjoy pleasure and to enjoy intimacy. And we just need all of our body to function. So I think it's really important for your mental and your physical health and also your connections to other people.
So what is the typical type of patient that you're seeing? Is it somebody that is like post-operatively or maybe pre-operatively, or is it somebody that's just, they don't know what's going on for them, or a combination of all of that?
Yeah, so I see a lot of patients pre and post prostate cancer treatment, whether it's radiation or surgery. And I think there's a real misconception in the community that if you have prostate cancer, you're going to be impotent, so not be able to be sexually functioning for the rest of your life, and you're going to probably have to wear nappies. And they're just, both of those things are just not true anymore. And if people can have rehabilitation and prehabilitation, so prepare before their treatment, they have really good outcomes now, and there's lots of ways to work around the problems.
So can I just ask a question in there? You said now, so like previously, was the treatment different or something, so that was, so essentially you have your prostate removed or whatever, so it's not physically possible for you to achieve or maintain an erection previously. Is the treatment now different so that is possible?
Yeah. So in the past, you know, they didn't know how to save nerves, and the nerves are what give you the erectile function and the sexual function. And nowadays, like, the surgery and the radiation is so much more targeted that those nerves get saved. There is always a period of time with both treatments that you're not getting sexual function. And as an exercise physiologist, I'm sure you understand that all muscles need to be moving and exercised so that they don't shrink. And if you're doing rehabilitation or prehab with the penis shaft, then you can maintain the length. And then when those nerves regenerate and wake up over time, you can get your function back. And there's also ways for people who can't get their function back to overcome it and still have erectile function and sexual pleasure. So that is something that is really quite new, you know, like that's, as you know, the treatments have got for prostate cancer have got much more advanced. There's a lot less damage done. And also we've become a lot more knowledgeable in how we can help people overcome those things. So the difference between 8 years ago when I started seeing men in this issue as opposed to now is night and day. It, you know, it used to be that about 40% of my clients would get that natural function. Now about 70% do.
Do you think that is, like, in the profession, like the people that are actually doing those procedures, do you think that's widely known? Because I don't know. I mean, I don't have an issue, but I have no idea. I had heard that, oh, well, yeah, if you have prostate cancer, chances are you're going to have to survive on, I can't even think of the blooming names of the pills that they take to give you
Viagra.
Viagra, yeah. That you're going to have that for the rest of your life, and, you know, they don't want to do that, so they're delaying treatment and all that kind of stuff. And I guess that's, so I don't know whether it's widely spread, but I guess you also see people that are putting it off and potentially putting their life at risk because they feel like they're going to lose their manhood, et cetera. And then you have that downward spiral on their mental health.
Yeah, that's very, very common. And that's the message that I think is so important, is that, you know, those things are overcome now. So if you spoke to someone who had these treatments 10, 20 years ago, they are going to have had those kind of outcomes. But that just isn't the way it is anymore. So I think, and also if you need treatment, the earlier you have treatment, the less damage is done and the better, like, long-term recovery you have.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we really need to flip that message on its head, like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's an old way of thinking, and it's not like that anymore. And, you know, I'm always meeting guys that will say to me, you know, just in normal life, oh God, I'm not going to get my PSA checked because I don't want to have I don't want to know if I've got prostate cancer because I don't want the treatment. And I'm like, why? The treatment now is not so disastrous anymore, and we can overcome those side bags. So, you know, and dying of prostate cancer is really unpleasant, and it's completely preventable. Like, prostate cancer is 96 to 98% curable now. So
that's one of the better ones to get.
Definitely. So if you want to get, if you know you've got it and you need treatment, then you certainly shouldn't be delaying treatment because you're worried about your sexual function, because that's something that now we can definitely work around and improve. And in a lot of cases, people get back to their pre-treatment function.
Right.
So in answering your other question, was the other type of patients I see is I see a lot of younger men with premature ejaculation. And I see a lot of guys of all ages just for erectile dysfunction in general, things like porn addiction and kinks and basically any sort of sexual dysfunction at all.
Right. Okay. And so most of your clients, do they come to you via referral, or, you know, just use like direct reach out, private looking for
both? So I get a lot of referrals from urologists, and a lot from, like, sexual health nurses and physiotherapists, and then also and mental health professionals, because often people will go to a psychologist to talk about their mental health, and their sexual well-being will come up.
Yes.
And then people can also self-refer. So nurse practitioners are like general practitioners. You can refer yourself and they get a Medicare rebate for their services.
Okay. So
I also have a podcast called The Penis Project.
Yes, I saw, I've got it on my screen right now.
Where I talk about, and the reason I started that with a colleague of mine who's a physiotherapist in men's health, and we started that over 3 years ago now, and for the purpose that men don't often talk about their sexual health issues. And they, like, erectile dysfunction is so common. One in three men over 50 can't get an erection without a tablet. One in two over 60. And by the time you get to 70, only one in five can get an erection without help. So that's just a natural aging process. And I think when I see guys, they'll be like, oh, I can't get a decent erection, I don't know why. And then I'll be like, oh, I can see you've had a knee replacement. What happened there? I just wore it out. I'll be like, well, how come you're okay about your knee wearing out from age, but you think your penis has to defy age? So it's, people need to know these stats. They need to know that they're normal and not be ashamed and be able to talk about it. And that was the idea of the podcast, that they hear other people that are going through the same thing, and they can learn that what they're doing is, what's happening to them is really common, and there are ways to work around it. And so I think nothing is as beneficial for people as living, listening to other people's lived experience. And that's what the penis project is about.
Yeah. How much in the work that you're doing with people, obviously there's, well, I guess this is part of it too, but lifestyle. And like, obviously I'm very big on sustainable, healthy lifestyle choices, hence, you know, the type of exercise that we do, not just cardiovascular, but also some strength training, eating well, finding the right supplements for you, et cetera. How much of what you said, well, I guess a bit like me, I see people that have made some really bad life choices and now they want to change that. Is a lot of what you see, well, let's just start with this, preventable because of lifestyle choice?
Definitely. So I think not prostate cancer, obviously, but a lot of erectile dysfunction is caused by people being overweight and having unstable blood sugar levels. So
can we just talk about that for a second? So if the, I imagine, is that just to do with blood flow?
Yeah.
Like if so you're take the overweight, for instance, is that just, that's impacting blood flow? So we're not getting any blood flow down there. So you're messed up.
Basically, it's like parking a car on the hose. You know, if someone walks into my clinic and tells me they've got, you know, erectile dysfunction and they've got a big fat belly, I'll go, well, no wonder you've just parked the car on the hose and you're trying to water the lawn. That's exactly what's happening. And they'll be like, what? And I'll be like, you know, you need to get rid of your belly. And they'll be like, oh, okay. And like the other thing is when you have belly fat, you produce a hormone called SHBG and it binds to your testosterone. So being overweight means that your testosterone levels, you might be producing testosterone, but it's not available to you to use, which then makes you a grumpy old man. Your libido is low and you're not very good at forming muscle, as you know. And then you've also got the added problem that you've got not enough blood flow going to your genitals. And then on top of that, you know, it's actually quite awkward to be sexually active and you probably don't feel that great about yourself when you've got a big fat belly.
Well, yeah, I wanted to get to that part, yeah.
And then also, for every 16 kilos a guy puts on in weight, they lose 1.5 to 2 centimetres of penis length. So I think if men knew this,
how does that work?
They would never get a fat belly. Well, your like pudenda, the area where your penis is, starts to get fatter and you also get more internal fat. So the penis just starts to shrink back into your body.
Oh,
and
there you
so
go.
If you tell your clients, the best thing I always say to guys, you know, if you lost 16 kilos or 30 kilos, you'd get like 2 to 4 centimetres of your penis back. They'll be like, I'm on a diet. It's the most encouraging thing ever.
Yeah, right. So let's get to the mental side of, you know, you're seeing people as well. So obviously that was the physical side we were talking about. But I imagine that a lot of men can be impacted by, like, obviously past experiences, the mental side of how they feel about either the feedback they've been given in the past or how they feel about the confidence in themselves in being able to perform or whatever. I don't know, maybe they've been watching a lot of porn and think, oh, well, I'm not this, I'm not that, I can't do that, I don't want to do this, whatever, whatever. How big a part does that play in the stupid man mind?
A really big part, I think. So for a couple of reasons. One is if you think about how humans were in caveman times, you know, you were having sex in the cave, you had an erection, a bear came in to attack you or pinch your food or whatever.
You've got more insight than I do about caveman days, but okay.
I've read a lot about cavemen and the evolution of sex. You can't run away or fight an enemy with an erection. It's pretty difficult to run a long way, I imagine, with a hard erection. So you go into flight and flight, you get adrenaline, rushes through your body, and adrenaline is like kryptonite is to Superman to a penis. You know, have adrenaline run through your body and you get a soft on, which is great if you're fighting a lion or a bear. It's not great when the adrenaline rush is from anxiety. So if you were having sex one day and your penis, for some reason, whatever it is, went soft on you in the middle of it or failed you when you wanted it to get up, it couldn't get up, the next time you want to use that penis or you want to try and be intimate with somebody, you're going to feel a little bit anxious. And as soon as that anxiety comes into your mind of, God, I hope it works today, you're going to get a flood of adrenaline. So it's this self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
And then I think we really also underestimate how having your sexual function actually makes us feel as a person. And I think women particularly don't understand this for men. And the way I try and explain it to female partners is, imagine if tomorrow you might be a 50-year-old woman and you're never going to breastfeed a baby again. But imagine tomorrow you were told you had breast cancer and you had to have a double mastectomy. You would probably feel quite differently about your femininity. And they'll always go, oh, well, of course. And I'm like, well, that is what it's like for a man to lose his sexual function. So I think it has a much bigger impact on how they feel as a man and how they feel in their self-confidence than just being able to perform.
Now, obviously, in these few scenarios, we've been talking about just men, but let's talk about women, for instance, because obviously the mental side for women is incredibly important as well. What would be the equivalent of, because for a man it's obvious, okay, if you're anxious or whatever and you can't, you're not getting the blood flow, whatever, you know, you can't get an erection, apart from keeping your legs crossed and being like this and saying, no, I just don't want to, what is the equivalent the for women?
Painful sex is the biggest thing I see for women is,
right.
And that can be in younger girls because they have hypertonic pelvic floors, so really tight pelvic floor, and anxiety will cause painful sex. And for women as they get older, vaginal atrophy, dry vaginas, menopause, and all of these things can impact on sexual pleasure and also pain. And no one feels like being intimate if it's painful. And that's the other thing that I think isn't well known in like the community is that no one should be having painful sex. You shouldn't just grin and bear it, you know.
Yeah.
There is treatments for all of these things. And so, you know, and even couples who have been together a very long time are often embarrassed to talk to each other about this. Like it's hard for a woman to say, oh, I don't want to have sex because it actually really hurts now. It feels like sandpaper. And you know, he doesn't often want to say, he'll just withdraw from their partner rather than say, look, I haven't been instigating it because it's not working, because they're not quite sure how to deal with that. And then from a relationship point of view, in a heterosexual relationship in particular, if you're both aging together, often the female part will think, he doesn't find me attractive anymore. I've got ugly and old and wrinkly or whatever. But really what's going on for him is it's not working, or that's what's going on for her. And everyone just feels a little bit rejected. So, you know, I think communication is the most important thing, and knowing that there is physical ways of dealing with these things, but all physical problems end up being mental and all mental often end up being physical.
Well, that's a good lead into my next question, which I was going to say, how important it is to have an understanding partner on both sides, which is obviously then that open communication as well. But let's just say that there's people listening right now and they're saying, yeah, I can relate to that. How do you, let's say it's a man, how does the man initiate that conversation with their partner to say, look, I've got a problem, I haven't wanted to talk about it or whatever, maybe I've just given the answer, but what's the way for people to be able to break the ice?
Well, I think just opening the conversation and often just saying, hey, I listened to this podcast and I realized that something I've been really worried about is actually really common, and I thought it was just me, and I'm really embarrassed to tell you about it, but I need to talk to you, you know? Yeah. And I think you'll often find that the partner's relieved that it's not them, because we always blame ourselves when someone withdraws
absolutely.
From us. And I think if it's a woman asking me that question, I always say, raise the conversation when you're walking with your male partner or when you're driving in a car, because most men aren't very good at front on. But even if it's the other way around, if you're the guy raising the conversation, that's a pretty good strategy to take as well, because you're probably going to feel a lot more comfortable talking about it when you don't have to look at someone in the face and be quite so vulnerable.
Yeah, what was that you said? What?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been feeling the same way too.
Yeah.
And like it is tricky. I mean, if you think about like confidence is built over time through your experiences. Like, okay, I've done this. Oh yeah. Like if it's in sport or something, okay, I won, I'm getting positive feedback of the things I did today. They worked in this particular space. I mean, you can have conversations with people and you get good outcomes and so forth, but then all of a sudden you take all your clothes off and you're right with somebody and it's like, okay, I feel pretty vulnerable right now. Like, do you like what you're seeing? Am I doing the right things? Is it like, and then over time, it's like you said before, am I too old now? Am I, do you more interested in somebody else? You're sick and tired and all that kind of stuff. So it's like, it's the most vulnerable that you'll ever be. And I think it's, you've, it to some extent, it does require courage, doesn't it? To say, do you know what? Look, we need to just have a bit of a talk about this. I'm not comfortable with this, or this isn't, how are you feeling about things? And it's confronting.
It is. It's, I mean, I think it's probably one of the most difficult conversations you ever have. And I mean, I'm obviously not young anymore. And my husband is older than me. And, you know, in our lifetime, we've come across issues as well. And, you know, I talk to people all day long, literally, about sex. But it's still hard for me to go home and raise that conversation at home.
Yeah.
And, you know, I feel like if I ever need to, you know, it's always taken me a few weeks to get up the courage. And I think it's just hard. Sometimes it's not hard, and that's the problem. But it's a difficult conversation to have.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to give your podcast details and your website at the end of this, but you've got a really cool little video on your, I think it's on your homepage, about porn versus reality. I think it's on your homepage, which is really good. So I wanted to ask you, what are there any pros of porn and what are the cons of porn? Because it's like when I was a kid, and of course, as you're going through adolescence and so forth, gosh, I don't know. If I had access to the internet when I was 15 or 16, I don't know what that would have been like. Maybe I'd never come out of my bedroom. But when I was a kid, like the only way you could do it, you'd have to go to a newsagent, pretend you're over 18 to get a magazine or, you know, something like that. And because I always looked 11, that was never going to be a way for me to understand about women. Hence my first girlfriend was 23 and I had no idea what was going on. So over to you. Well, pros, cons.
So I'm not anti-porn. I actually think, you know, that it has a place. Mm-hmm. So the pros are, is that, you know, if you are having solo sex, it can definitely be stimulating to have visuals. And I think it's, and if you're with a partner and, you know, let's face it, if you're with the same person for a really long time, things can get a little bit stale and a little bit boring and we all get wrapped up in the same script. And so watching porn together, if it's something that you both like, can be stimulating and it can also give you some ideas and spice things up a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think the negative of porn is when you're watching it all of the time and if you start watching it too young, because when you watch porn, you get a massive like dump of dopamine, and that's what happens when you take a drug. And so, you know, if you get a massive dopamine shot and then you're feeling a bit down the next day, you'll go, oh, yesterday when I watched that, I felt good. And then it becomes like a crutch, and it's no different to drinking too much or taking drugs or whatever. So I think everything in moderation. And also it's important about what type of porn you watch. So if you're watching porn and you're heterosexual and the thing that normally turns you on is vanilla sex, then, you know, it's kind of advisable to stick in that type of genre of porn, because if you keep making it go to a higher level and then suddenly you're watching sex with animals, well, you're probably never going to do that in your real life. And then it's going to be very difficult for you to have sexual stimulation because you're overstimulated when you're watching porn with another person. Right. So it's about, you know, I think keeping it real and just not doing too much of it. You know, it can be like the cherry on top every now and then, but it doesn't need to be something that you're using every single time. And the other problem with men in particular watching a lot of porn is that, particularly young guys, is that they will, it's often how they learn about sex. And let's face it, porn isn't real. You know, most women aren't squirting, you know, liters of fluid everywhere. And, you know, so I think it's important that men realize that that's not normal. And also that the guys that they pick to be porn stars have exceptionally large penises on a bell curve. And so the average Caucasian male's penis is like 9 centimeters long, flaccid. That's not very long. Whereas if you look at them on porn, they're all huge. And then you'll end up having a bit of a complex about the size of your penis, which you don't need. And like, you would be surprised how many guys that are virgins that have arranged marriages that are going back to their country of origin for a wedding will come in to me and book an appointment just so that I can look at their penis and tell them whether it's normal, because the only erect penis they've ever seen before is on porn. And so they think there's something wrong with them when they're completely normal.
Yeah.
So there's some pros and there can be quite a lot of negative. There's also a thing called the death grip. So if you're masturbating to porn and you're using your hand. Death grip,
I haven't heard of this.
So this is my penis called Jeffrey. So you can imagine if you're masturbating, you're going to like hold on really hard. And when you're doing that, you're never going to simulate, no vagina or anus is ever going to be as tight as you can squeeze with your hand.
Right. Yeah.
So if you're always masturbating with your hand and you're using a death grip, then when you try and have sex with a partner, it's never going to give you the same amount of sensation. And so your penis is going to get used to that. And then you're going to find it hard to have an orgasm with a partner. So the other really pro on people using masturbation tools so that they can avoid that death grip. That's another negative.
I think this is episode about 1220. That's the first penis that we've had on the podcast before.
Yeah, so it's Jeffrey. He's very well known, Jeffrey, on my YouTube channel.
Yeah, if you're listening, if you're listening to this, you need to go and check out the version on YouTube. let's talk. I could make this about me now, right? I'm single.
Asking for a friend. Right?
What was that? What'd you say?
Asking for a friend.
No. So sexual health, if it's so important, and you know, when you're single like me, and I'm choosing to be single, like I was married for 20 years and I've had a couple of other relationships, but I've been single for like 5 years now, and happy. I'll say that I'm happy. But because I am so focused on health, many people say to me, hey, you should just go get an escort, you know, book it once a month, whatever. That's not something that I'm ever going to do. It's not my thing, right? I'm very much, no, would have to be in a relationship to do that. So how does the single person optimize their sexual health without just say, okay, well, just I'm never going to go there?
Yeah. Well, you definitely need to stay sexually active, because it is a case of if you don't use it, you lose it.
Mm.
So, I mean, a healthy man should be getting 3 to 5 erections when they're asleep at nighttime every night, because that is what exercises the smooth muscle of the penis and keeps it healthy. And, you know, you don't want to like not have sex, or, you know, solo sex or coupled sex for years and years and years, and then you meet someone and suddenly you're interested and then it fails you. And also, if you're not getting regular erections, you're more at risk of getting Peyronie's disease, which is a wonky willy, a bent one, because of lack of use. So, I mean, I think it depends on how you grew up, but a lot of people see masturbation or solo sex as a bad thing. And I think it's a really healthy thing for all the reasons we've talked about. Number one, it's exercising your penis. It's good for your mental health. It's good for your physical health. And you're getting a rush of all of those happy hormones that you need. And I just think it's about when you're having solo sex, not feeling shame or guilt around it, and being mindful about how you do that. So, you know, a few times a week, great. And perhaps using a toy such as one of these, which is like a masturbation device. It's called a Pulse Duo. And there's also one of these, which is called a Nero. And they're both things that you can imagine when you put your penis in it and you use it, you can't possibly get a death grip. So, you know, it's just about making sure that what you're doing, even when you're doing it on your own, is enjoyable. You're not always watching porn. You're not escalating your porn all the time, and you're not getting a death grip. But, keeping yourself sexually
active. So is this something that you think, I mean, a lot of my clients, the majority of my my client base is women. Obviously, it's a very, like, I have a particular field that I work in. If it comes up, because some people mention it on their first consultation that, you know, they get undressed in the dark, they don't want their husband to touch them, you know, that kind of stuff. Or it can be the other way, the man, like, doesn't like their wife to see them and so forth. Is, say, talking about solo sex, is that something that women more comfortably talk about? I don't think I've ever had a conversation with a man where they talk about, you know, masturbation.
I don't think that most women talk about masturbation either, to be honest. I think most women probably do it, but most women don't talk about it. I think that's probably different in younger generations, but certainly in my generation, I think that's uncommon. And like when I bring up masturbation in consults and I have a couple with me, often both of them will look at each other and they're not sure whether they should admit they do it or not. So,
yeah, so do you think that, like, if I think back to where, so I'm 55 now, so my parents didn't talk to me about sex at all. And so to talk about, you know, solo sex, masturbation, it just wouldn't be a thing. So is it like you said before, is it because there's just shame about it and that there's something wrong with you because, you know, you just don't have a partner, so there's something wrong with you, you have to do that?
Yeah, I think so. I think it comes from, like, basically it probably comes from a lot of religion, you know, in the past, and then that's just passed on down. But I think, you know, I think it's important even to have solo sex when you're in a relationship. I mean, you're usually in a relationship, people have mismatched libidos. We're not, you know, very unlikely that you're going to have someone who wants sex the same amount of times. But it doesn't mean that the person with the higher or the lower libido is wrong. And a really good way of dealing with that is having solo sex. And so I personally think it's really healthy. It probably isn't something that even I would talk to about, you know, at lunch with a pile of friends. But if someone asked me, I'd happily talk about it. And I know when I studied to be a sexologist, I was really ashamed of myself because one of the lectures I had, and this is like 10 years ago now, but there was a lecture and we were sitting in there and the lecturer said, "Who's got children in the room, stand up." And, you know, most of us stood up, and my daughter at the time was 15 and my son was 17. And he was like, "Stay standing if you've ever talked to your kids about masturbation." So I stood up. "Stay standing if you've talked to your daughter about it." And I had to sit down. And that night I was living in the country at the time. My daughter was 15 at home. I rang her up and I was like, "You know, I feel really terrible. Like, I've said to your brother, it's healthy to masturbate and just make sure you do it in your room in private, blah, blah, blah. But not once have I ever had that conversation with you because you're a girl." So without realizing it, I had never passed on that message to her. She was mortified and was like, "Yep, you've said it now, Mum. Can we never have this conversation again?" But I think we need to be, as parents maybe, and as a society, be more open about how important our sexual health is. And if you don't use it, you lose it. And also for young people in particular, if we talked more about this, they're much less likely to make bad choices. So you never go food shopping when you're on a diet because you'll probably buy things that aren't good for you.
Donuts.
You probably shouldn't. Yeah, exactly. You probably shouldn't go out, you know, looking for a partner in life or dating or partying or whatever if you're sexually frustrated, because you might bring home something that wasn't particularly right for you. You're much more less likely to do that if you're sexually satisfied with yourself.
Yeah, and I think if I think about it, I've probably been in four serious relationships. One was for 20 years. And I mean, you learn over time. Like, my first girlfriend was at 23, had no idea what was going on. It wasn't a great relationship. My next one, I married her. And you kind of just think that, in my head, was, "Oh, well, you're in love, everything will just work out." But of course, life isn't like that. It's all rainbows and so forth. And it comes down to some really, you know, tough conversations that you have to have at different points. And I think the sexual health type of, let's just call it sexual health or sexual enjoyment, whatever, those conversations have to emerge over time as you spend more time together. And I look, my personal opinion is that a one night stand is a disaster, and I would never have a one night stand, because I think the best sex comes as you fall more deeply in love with your partner, and you build that trust, and you don't have any qualms about asking for what you want, giving what your partner wants, and you're able to have those conversations when you are vulnerable, but you know you are completely safe. I don't know where I was going with that, but I think what we do need to be able to have the confidence to be able to, oh, well, that's where I was going. So like, if you have different sexual appetites and you need solo sex, then that should be okay for you to have that conversation. And hopefully your partner is going to be understanding. I know that some people would say, well, why do you need to do that? You have me. There's something wrong with me. You don't like me, etc. But you need to be able to have the conversation to get, I guess, the people to understand. I mean, do you do couples work where you do get the couples in together to, and this is the first time that they're mentioning it and say, well, actually, no, that is, it's healthy, it's normal.
Often couples will come in, and the most common thing that couples will book in for is a mismatched libido. And, you know, the person with the, you know, I'll say, well, to the other one, oh, why don't you masturbate then? And they'll go, oh, because I've got a partner, why would I do that? And that might be offensive. And often the partner will say, I wouldn't mind at all. Like, I really enjoy having sex once a week, once a fortnight, but you want it five times a week. We would have so many less arguments about that if you did that, you know. So I just think masturbation is something that we don't talk about enough. And I think that is changing with younger generations. I'm in my 50s as well. And, you know, I certainly, no one ever talked to me about it. I remember the first time I even knew that girls masturbated, and it was when I was sharing a house with a friend and her older sister. And I said to her, I was like,
what's that?
I was like 21 at the time. And she said to me, I said something like, I don't think I've ever had an orgasm. And she was like, well, you'd know if you did. And then she was like, what about when you masturbate? And I was like, girls don't do that, do they? And she was like, yes. How are you going to know what to tell a partner you like if you don't know? Yeah. And it was, I'd never even considered it, you know. And I think that's what we need to think about. And we do need to know our own bodies in every way. Like, we all have different exercise and different food that suits us, and we have different ways we experience pleasure. And if you don't experiment with yourself, you don't love yourself, then how are you going to find out those things to share with someone else?
Great point. Just a couple more questions. Have you noticed, is there a difference between how people think about their sexual health or actual medical issues pre-COVID and post-COVID? And then I'll tell you why I'm asking that.
I've seen a lot more younger men post-COVID with sexual health issues than I ever noticed before, but I haven't noticed that there's a different way of them thinking about it. No.
So what would be the with the young men? So what's their issue?
Well, often they will come in nowadays with erectile dysfunction and premature ejaculation and post COVID, and that is usually because when you have COVID, you'll get inflammation of various parts of your body. And if that inflammation happens to be in your blood flow to your genitals, then you will get less. So there's been an uprise in erectile dysfunction in young men since COVID because of the side effects of COVID.
Interesting.
So I've definitely seen a change in that with COVID, and that has been reported worldwide. I haven't seen a difference, to be honest, in that attitude, really. I haven't noticed that, but I'd be interested to know what you've noticed.
So the thing that I noticed before, so I've been in business 15 years doing what I see. When I first started, everyone wanted to come to me for weight loss. It was like weight loss, weight loss, weight loss. In this era now, I do believe that the term weight loss is now starting to form part of the woke culture, where it's like, you can't mention the words weight loss anymore because that's going to trigger me to think about, you know, this, that, and the other. But post COVID, people are mentioning they want to be healthy. You know, they want to have more energy. And they either don't mention weight loss at all, or it's like the third, fourth thing that they mention. They want health first. So my observation is not specifically around sexual health, but it's around how people are looking at health. Now, people are most usually unlikely to talk to me about that. Oh, yeah, my sex life is no good. Some people do, but most don't. They're talking about health in other ways, and that's perhaps wrapped up in there as well. So that's interesting.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, but I wonder whether people are more coming to you now and saying that they're worried about their overall holistic health because of the woke culture, that really they just want to lose weight, but they feel like they can't say that because it's not really kosher to say that anymore.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I know whether they're consciously doing it or unconsciously doing it. I don't know. But certainly all the language that we say now has got to be, should I be referring to you as a non-binary cis, whatever.
Yes. It's very confusing.
I just talk to people as humans, and I find that that makes it so much easier. Just a couple more questions. Can you maybe give us a couple of do's and do nots in the bedroom?
Okay, do's and do nots in the bedroom. Well, do not make a comment about the appearance of someone's body, I think, in a bedroom is really bad. And the other do not is if there is a sexual issue going on, like your partner, I don't know, touches you in a certain way that you don't find a turn on, or if there's, yeah, something going on that you know, you've noticed that your partner's erection isn't as hard, or the vagina feels drier, or whatever's going on, it's never a good time to bring up the problems when you're in the middle of sex. And I think, you know, you need to like file it away, and then when you're not in the bedroom, have that conversation later, because it's pretty unsexy to have that. And it's also quite soul destroying, I think, to have the problem brought up in that situation.
Most so vulnerable spot, maybe,
change tact, do something different for that time, and then talk about that instance at a later date. And the do's in the bedroom is communicate. And I think that's back to that whole thing of, make sure you know what you like and what you respond well to, and actually communicate that to your partner. So rather than complaining about what you don't like, actually give some, you know, advice about what you do like, because everybody has different ways they like to be touched, places they like to be touched, you know, pressure they like to be touched with. And you can't expect a partner just to know that, you know, because you're going to be very different to any previous partners they've had or to themselves. So the only way you can have good sex with anybody is if you communicate.
So you mentioned, is it Jeffrey?
Yes, Jeffrey. Yep.
So say that, well, either partner is thinking, oh, gee, you know what? It would be nice to get some toys happening in the bedroom. How do you initiate that conversation? Do you think if you're thinking, oh, they're going to be really against this? They may not be, but they're thinking that. How do you bring that conversation up?
Well, I think when it comes to sex toys, I think we need to think about them differently. So the example that I give is, if you talk to a builder when he built a house, he won't tell you, he'll say, I built this amazing house in this place, and what the house looks like at the end and how it makes the people feel he built the house for or whatever. He's not going to tell you about the drill that he built it with, or the hammer or the screwdriver or the tools. So yep. I think sex toys are like that. When we have a sexual experience with someone and it involves sex toys, we're not ever focusing on, I had a great time with my whatever. It's, I had a really nice time with my partner. That's just one of the tools that are involved in it. So I think straight away, if you think about it that way, it's not like the toy is a replacement for being with a partner. You know, yep. Masturbating with a masturbation tool is nowhere near the same as having a sex toy and a partner and you're all doing it together. So yep. I think, first of all, having that different look on at that is important. And I think it's just normal that people get bored in their sex life. You know, we all, especially if you're in a relationship for a long time, you get into this script of, I touch his right leg and he touches my left boob, and then off we go.
Here we go. And okay, it's over.
And it's boring, you know, and I think that just going home and saying to your partner, hey, look, we've been doing the same thing for ages and it's been great and I really enjoy it, but I'd be kind of keen to try something new. What do you think? And I saw this sex toy, or I read about this, or a friend told me they use that, or, you know, I watched, maybe we could watch some porn together and see what they do and just look for new things.
Yeah.
I think most people, and it's the way you word it, it's not what we've done is bad and I want to do something new.
Yes,
We've
true.
been doing the same thing for a long time. How about we mix it up? I mean, most people don't go on holidays to the same place every year. And it's always exciting when you try something new. So try
Yes.
something new. And I also think, sorry, about trying something new with your partner isn't just in the bedroom. Like if you think back to when you first started falling in love with someone, you did a lot of exciting stuff together. You know, you would have tried new sports or new activities or gone to new places, and experiencing new things together is the fun. So going and experience, suggesting new experiences outside of the bedroom is also really good for your sex life.
I think ultimately, if you can like really connect, then you know it's going to show up in the bedroom at some point, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah.
Two more questions. What's the best piece of advice you've ever received? It doesn't have to be in terms of what you would do in the bedroom. It could be, but, you know, just in general, whether it's business or whatever.
I heard this. I listened to some of your other podcasts over the weekend and I heard you ask people that. So I've actually thought about it. The best piece of advice I've ever received is my dad told me when I was quite young that you can't please all the people all of the time.
Yeah.
And you just need to do your best. And I think that's right. And I think, and that its approach, it applies to everything in life. Like if you do your best, hopefully you're going to please people most of the time, and sometimes you're not going to, and that's just the way it is. And
Yes.
try not to focus too much on that. And I think that applies to every single part of your life. And whenever I feel like I haven't done the best thing that I maybe could have in a situation, I think back to that and go, well, I'm thinking that 90% of the time I'm doing the right thing and helping people out and pleasing everybody and myself, and sometimes I get it wrong, and that's the way it is.
Yeah, nicely said. Well, this has been HR. I think we could just keep talking for hours and hours about this topic. It is something that, well, even though I'm single, it's an area that I'm passionate about because I know just how important, like most of my clients, they're in relationships, and I just know how important your sexual health is in terms of your overall happiness, your overall health and your mental wellness as well. So you've delivered some absolute nuggets here. I'd encourage everybody to go back and perhaps re-listen to this to get out all your points. If people want to get in touch with you, you've got a couple of things. So why don't you tell us about that? You've got the penis project, which I like how you've got two nuts and a hammer as the logo.
My daughter drew that logo when she was only 21 and she's very proud of it. I asked for a sausage and two eggs, but she was like, nah, nailing it's way better. So, okay.
Yeah, this is better. give us your website, Des. I will put it in the link here with the podcast, but tell us how people can get in touch with you.
So it's just www.melissahadleybarrett.com, and that website is all about men's health. And that's where I have an online shop with products that I recommend and things like that, and lots of blogs and information and online programs. And then my clinic website is rshealth.com.au.
Yeah,
and I also have a YouTube channel, which is just my name, and Instagram, which is my name. And I'll send you a link. You can put it in the show notes.
Yeah, sure. And your podcast is called The Penis Project.
Yeah. And it's on Spotify and Apple and
wherever you get this one, you'll get that one too. Yeah, terrific.
Yeah.
Well, this has been fantastic. It's been a pleasure to get to know you here today. And thanks for sharing everything, all your wisdom and knowledge about this. You're obviously very, very knowledgeable. So I would say reach out to Melissa if you want to know more about your own sexual health. Don't be afraid to have the conversation, and let's just all get sexually functioning better. I'm going to give you the closing words. So what would you like to say to our guests, apart from go masturbate more? What's your closing message for our listeners?
Have difficult conversations. I think that's the most important thing. And if you're interested in that, I did a TEDx talk recently on that, which will be out soon. So if you follow me on Instagram, you'll be able to see that. But how to have difficult conversations.
Awesome. Thanks, Melissa.
Thank you very much.